Charity. Snow fell weighty on the slums, wisps and flutters, dirty from the smoke of the furnaces, drifting grey into the corners of the windows, the doorways, the alleys. The burners' slogans were everywhere, daubed in red paint across the houses. All equal, and death to the royalists, and sacrifice everything. The fury of Swarbrick and his ilk at the world and everything in it had spread like a sickness from books to newsbills to pamphlets until the poorly printed tantrums were pasted everywhere directly onto the sooty walls. Today's rant against those who would drag the Union back into the past splattered on top of yesterday's, torn paper fluttering. A snatch of song floated across the frozen street. A man staggered by, sucking at a bottle. Someone screamed with laughter from an upstairs window, and Savine flinched. Laughing in Adua these days felt as grimly inappropriate as laughing at a funeral, at an execution. "I hope you are well, Citizen Valamir."
"I am alive, Citizeness Brock, and my wife is alive, which after the events we endured in Valbeck, I consider to be remarkable good fortune."
"Your fortunes otherwise?" She could see those at a glance. Valamir had always been lean, but he looked positively skeletal now, frayed clothes carefully darned. "I still fondly remember that jelly you served at your house in Valbeck." Valamir snorted.
"There have been no jellies lately. I was employed as a foreman in a textile mill for a while, but following the great change, the price of coal, the place shut down. My wife takes in laundry. I have been carving toys. Soldiers are always popular."
He leaned close to murmur,
"Providing they sport no royalist symbols."
"These are difficult times for everyone." There were hawkers everywhere, struggling to turn a few bits from matches, ribbons, apples, shoestrings. Beggars, too, offering up their wounds, their diseases, their misery for inspection, knowing that despite the poverty, people here were more generous than in the richer parts of town. People here understood what it was to have nothing. Most of them were only one payday away from it. Prostitutes stood shivering on a corner in the same tall shoes and slit skirts they had worn when King Jazal was on the throne. The great change had not changed much for them. It took a brave woman now to show a bare leg to the freezing winter, but they tried their best, pale goose flesh and pinched faces, chapped pink from the cold, breath smoking as they whined hopeless come-ons to the uncaring chill. Then there were the footpads and tricksters, circling anyone who looked as if they might have a coin. There had been a time when Savine counted on her father's name to keep her safe on these streets. Now she never stepped out of doors without Haroon and a few well-armed men.
"You know I have the highest regard for you as a woman of business."
Valamir cleared his throat. His voice had an ill crackle to it.
"But prominent connections are not the safest thing these days. Might I ask why you sent for me?"
"In Valbeck, you helped me make money. Now, I want you to help me give it away." They had reached the back of the queue. Dozens of lumpen figures crowded along one side of the street, bound up into shapeless bundles of torn clothes, blankets, rags. They stamped at the snow to keep warm, hugged themselves, hugged each other. Further on, someone sawed at a violin while a woman danced. Danced well. Children pelted each other with snowballs, caught bystanders. There was laughter, clapping, a cheerful feeling all too rare in the city now.
"What are they queuing for?"
Savine sighed. She still was faintly embarrassed to utter the words.
"My charity, Citizen Valamir."
She gestured towards a tin chimney peering over the roofline, dark smoke billowing up, as the pale speck swirled down. I own 6 bakeries now in the borough, and have agents scouring Middleland for flour. Soup is made from whatever we can find. Thread is brought from Valbeck, and the blankets woven just up the street. Coal comes in from my mines in Angland through an agreement with Lady Governor Finry. I was using the canal I own with Detham Court to move goods until it froze. Everything in the city had frozen. The water in the fountains, the river around the boats, festoons of ice hung from broken gutters. In some of the cheaper taverns, she understood, the wine was known to freeze in the cups. When I first tried to give bread away, it turned into a riot. One of the wagons was upended. People wrestled in the mud for crumbs. People who got away with what I had given them were robbed in the next street. I observed the whole sorry business pressed into a doorway, while my companion's brothers shielded me with their bodies. It is not like you to show too much faith in people's good nature. Who knew generosity could be more dangerous than greed? A mistake I will not make again. Ever since then, I have been applying the same rigor to giving my money away as I did to making it. They crunched through the boot-mashed snow to the front of the queue, where it passed through the iron gates into the warehouse. Real estate in these parts has plummeted. I bought this place for a price you would not believe. She had bought half the decaying buildings in the neighborhood, in fact, and slashed the rents. I saw the roof mended and invested in guards and gates. I hired locals to drive wagons, handle goods, stoke ovens, knead dough. I distributed some carefully judged bribes among the local burners, secured some help from an old contact in the criminal fraternity, and made sure she kept order on the streets. She waved towards one of the braziers, a matching pair of Magier's frowning thugs in attendance. The people queue, hopefully without freezing. They receive a bag of coal, 2 loaves of bread, a blanket. There might be meat or milk for children on a good day. Names and addresses are taken, marks and signatures given to discourage fraud. But sometimes examples have to be made even so. Valamir raised a brow at her and she shrugged. It is not like me to show too much faith in people's good nature. These days we have fewer disruptions. Charity on an industrial scale, murmured Valamir. You were never one for half measures. No. I mean to set up a similar operation across the river, and need to leave the management of this one in capable hands. Mine? Unless they are fully occupied carving toys. I have no doubt I could make use of your wife's talents as well. My parents' house is currently filled with orphan children. The work has no end. She trailed off into awkward silence. Valamir was studying her with a healthy degree of suspicion. I read that pamphlet, you know. The pamphlets that circulated under the old regime had been bad enough. Some of the ones that circulated now went far beyond slander into the realm of sordid fantasy. I hardly dare to ask which one, said Savine, already feeling pinched by the cold. Valamir took out a paper, creased and faded, The Darling of the Slums. And there was that etching of a radiantly smiling Savine Danbrock dispensing coins to the starving while orphans clutched at her skirts. The sight of it made Savine feel faintly nauseous. What did you think? I could not avoid the conclusion that you were a damned liar. Savine gave a brittle smile. I would not dream of denying it. So I am forced to ask, what is the angle? Understandable, of course, given he had known her before Stauffenbeck, before Valbeck. Hard to believe it was only a year and a half ago. Savine Danglockter seemed a faint acquaintance, dimly remembered, and not with much affection. Is there some profit hidden in all this? Sabine thought of Zuri shaking her head over the numbers in the book.
Not of the financial kind, certainly.
Goodwill, then? Popularity?
We could all use a little goodwill in these troubled times, but I dare say I could polish my image for a fraction of what I am spending here.
So why? Valamir waved towards a woman waddling from the warehouse gates with a bag of coal, the bulge of pregnancy showing even through her mass of clothes, three children of decreasing height waddling after her, like ducklings after their mother, the one at the back with a loaf in his pink hand and two glistening streaks of snot down his face.
All this?
Why, indeed? Sabine took a deep breath, the cold of it almost painful, and gazed into the flames in the brazier.
It is, as you have no doubt guessed, entirely selfish. The truth is, the past seems to be a scab I cannot stop picking. I often think about Valbec, about the uprising and what I did there, and what I did before. About the children we used in our mill, the children I made you use.
The fire, the queue, the snowy street, it had all become a sparkling blur, her eyes focused beyond.
I think about the battlefield at Stauffenbeck, too, the graves there. You would hardly believe the size of the graves.
The truth is, I wonder if the great change has really made things worse, or if it simply made them worse for me. Are there more beggars now, or do I simply see them for the first time? Was I any better than judge when I held the power? Was I worse?
The truth is, I jerk awake in the night, sure the burners have come for me at last, and I know that I deserve it.
Sabine cleared her throat and wiped her stinging lower eyelids carefully with one gloved fingertip.
I have started to think it might be a fine thing if the world was a better place for my existence.
Kernsbeck had always told her she had a generous heart, and she had thought him a sentimental fool. Perhaps it had simply been hidden under all the pearl dust and ambition, hidden even from her.
I find I feel a little lighter for every mark I give away. That is the angle.
She tore her eyes from the queue and found her one-time business partner staring at her, pamphlet still in his hand, almost as surprised by that unguarded moment as she was.
"By all means, you can give me the lecture now," she snapped. "You will tell me nothing I have not told myself, that this is a feeble sponge to soak up the rivers of misery I spilled for my own profit, that this is the pinnacle of soppy hypocrisy. A woman who made slaves of children, handing out a few lumps of coal as though it makes her a heroine."
Valamir paused, mouth slightly open, perhaps trapped between denying it out of politeness or agreeing with the obvious truth. Then he turned to the queue, tucking the darling of the slums back in his coat pocket, and blew out a smoky sigh.
"I suppose it's better to give it away than to keep it."
And they stood together as the snow came down and watched the loaves being given away.
"They tossed General Bell from the Tower of Chains," called Leo.
A moment later, Savine heard the clonk of his leg tossed onto the floor as he dropped back against his pillows. She winced. Not just at the thought of the execution, but at the offhand way he spoke of it.
"I heard. Durin told the court they should give me his position."
She stepped into the bedroom, staring over at him, sprawled on the bed in the light of one candle.
"You want it?"
"Not yet. When the time's right."
He looked surprised that she was surprised, even though they had been throwing generals off the Tower of Chains almost as fast as they had bankers.
"Command of the people's army, Savine. I could sway them my way. They're in a wretched state, though, I hear. No food, no equipment, no morale. We could send them blankets, winter coats for the officers, bread maybe.
She still was not used to the shape his body made under the covers. The one leg, the strange absence of the other, like some fairground trick. It was a struggle not to stare.
Make sure they know it all comes from the young lion, to one set of heroes from another.
The gap in Leo's teeth showed as he grinned. You always know the right gloss to put on things. If only. She looked at the floor, wondering how she could possibly put any gloss on what she had to say.
There is something I need to share with you. Something I found out shortly before we were married.
He narrowed his eyes slightly.
Why didn't you tell me then?
He had changed. Before Stauffenbeck, it would never have occurred to him to ask.
I should have. But I never thought you would find out. I never thought anyone would.
He narrowed his eyes further, the look of a wary customer who suspects he is being palmed off with inferior goods.
But someone has.
It seems so. And they might make it known to others.
She swallowed. Every word felt like a weight to lift.
Secrets, in my experience, rarely stay buried.
So you judged it was better to tell me now than risk me finding out for myself.
Excellent strategy. I'd expect nothing less.
Please, Leo.
What kind of secret worries you?
The disgusting and potentially lethal kind. She clenched her fists, forced out the words.
King Orso and I.
Leo waved her away.
Celeste and Bloody Huygen told me you were lovers, remember?
Not that.
Well, yes, that, but so much more than that. It still shocked her to say it, still repelled her to think it.
She squeezed her eyes shut, her ears full of the sound of blood surging, and blurted it in a rush.
We have the same father.
Silence. When she opened her eyes, Leo was frowning at her, puzzled. As though he must have misheard.
Wait.
King Giselle and my mother were lovers, long ago, before he was king even, and I was the result.
Orso's your brother? Whispered Leo. She grimaced.
Yes.
That's why he didn't hang me.
Maybe, part of it.
Leo sat back, frowning at the ceiling.
So, my wife...
She closed her eyes again, face burning.
Yes.
Is King Giselle's oldest child.
What?
That she had enthusiastically practiced incest did not seem to have occurred to him. Or if it did, there were aspects of the case that interested him far more.
Our children are King Giselle's grandchildren.
By the dead, Savine, our children might be next in line to the throne.
It was not fear in his voice or disgust. It was excitement. Somehow that worried her even more.
But don't you see?
She sat on the bed, nervously clutching up a handful of the quilt.
The danger this puts us in, puts them in.
Of course. He clasped her hand, eyes gleaming in the candlelight. But danger and opportunity often walk hand in hand.
Savine stared.
My father used to say that.
Which one? Old Stiggs?
He leaned from the bed and fished up his iron leg again.
I can't say we got on.
He jammed his stump into the padded socket and started to fasten the buckles. But no one ever denied he was a clever bastard.
Can't be lying around, Savine. I've got work to do.
And he grasped his cane and stood. She sat in silence as he limped out, teeth gritted. Click, tap, grunt. Click, tap, grunt. That mixture of cunning, ruthlessness, burning ambition, and constant pain was far from unfamiliar. She had heard it said,
that every woman ends up marrying her father. Until that moment, she had always imagined herself the exception.